Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Is something burning? No, it's just time for the WIP Evening Show Hot Stove Check-In.
Yes, it is that time of night. The WIP Evening Show Hot Stove Check-In. Joe Giglio with you. And it's been a big week. The Real Muto rumors the other night. The trade yesterday. And boy, did we talk a lot about it. The impact it'll have on the Phillies. What is next as the Phillies get ready for spring training, knowing they now have the best catcher in baseball and maybe soon have another impact player in the form of Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. Let's bring on Scott Lauber. He'll start off our hot stove check-in tonight. Philly.com, Inquirer, Daily News. Scott joins us now. Scott, how you doing tonight, man?
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Doing well, and I'm starting to get excited here for what looks like now, Scott, even before we get to the big names and what could be the finishing touch here, it looks like a pretty good baseball team that Matt Klentak has built himself this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you had said at the beginning of the offseason that, you know, and put kind of the offseason in a vacuum, if you'd said you'd add Gene Segura, Andrew McCutchen, David Robertson, and then JT Realmuto to your existing team, you'd say, well, they had a pretty good offseason. And I think most of us feel like, I certainly feel like from the people I've spoken to, the Phillies remain optimistic that they'll get either Harper or Machado. If you add that piece to what they've already done, you know, it's certainly it's a good offseason turned great. And I don't know that as we sit here right now, tonight, I don't know that they are like the favorite to win the NL East. But as I said to somebody the other day, after the Realmuto trade was finalized, they certainly haven't lost any ground on the other teams in the division, and they've probably picked up a little bit. I think everyone thinks that Atlanta and Washington are both going to be good again. I think the Mets are better in a weird way than they were when last season ended, and the Phillies haven't lost ground on those teams. If anything, they've gained a bit.
Yes, Scott, and Realmuto is a big part of all of this because I like the pieces they brought in before, but those guys, even Segura, who's a very good player, and McCutchen, who's still good at this point, and Robertson, who's a good reliever, I think those three only move the needle so much. But Realmuto, he's a difference maker, Scott, and it's not just because he's a really good player, but it feels like every night they're going to have the advantage when you look across the diamond, you look across the lineup, like their value at catcher, what they're getting out of catcher, is going to be better than almost every team in baseball. And that in itself is an advantage.
Yeah, it sure is. He's going to impact the game in so many different ways. He already does impact the game in so many different ways, be it with his bat, a guy who produces more offense than most catchers do, kind of a upper half of the order sort of guy. I was kind of playing around with some lineups the other day, and, you know, you could see him hitting anywhere from second to fifth in that lineup comfortably, and that's a good thing. But it's also what he does behind the plate. And, you know, I was talking to a scout today from another team, and he brought up something that I hadn't even thought of, kind of another underrated benefit to bringing in JT Realmuto, is that he's played in the NL East for his entire career, which means not only does he know how to pitch to the Mets and the Braves and the Marlins and the Nationals, but he also knows your pitchers too, you know, if you're the Phillies. So, you know, he's a guy who's going to have to come in spring training. He's going to have to learn a new pitching staff, but not really, because he's faced these guys before and he knows them and he has an understanding of them on at least the basic level before he even gets there. So, you know, I hadn't thought of it from that standpoint that, you know, here was a guy who spent his entire career in the NL East, and not only does he know how to attack the teams you're going to be playing most often, but he's already got a base level of knowledge about your pitchers. And so maybe the learning curve for a new catcher who's coming in and has to get to know a whole new staff, maybe it's not as steep a curve as it would be for a catcher coming from another league or even another division.
That's a really good point. And Scott, that, along with a couple other things, there's reason to feel like there's even more upside. Like, Rimoto's in the prime of his career. He's baseball's best catcher at this point. Yet there's a couple of reasons why I think he could even be better here than he was in Miami. One is the obvious one, the park. He's going away from a pitcher's park that suppressed his offense to a hitter's park. And Scott, the one thing when you look at what people say about Realmuto and his career and his numbers, he's really good offensively and defensively. The one thing that he seems to not be great at is pitch framing, which the Phillies seem to be so big on. And I would think that they could help him become better at that. Because last year, the one thing I thought Alfaro improved at leaps and bounds was pitch framing. If they could help mold Realmuto with all the other skills he already has, we're looking at a guy that could get even better here.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of the one area, right, of Alfaro's game last year that you could point to and say, you know, he got really pretty good at that, was the framing of pitches. And I think, you know, I think maybe all the energy that they spent in terms of helping him with his framing, if they had apportioned some of that to his blocking, you know, maybe you would have seen that get better as well. I don't know, because I wasn't here yet, I don't know what the kind of like the breakdown was for the amount of work they did with him in spring training, but clearly they poured a lot of resources and attention into his framing. And, you know, maybe Realmuto can kind of benefit from a little bit of that. You know, the Phillies, I think, sort of lead the league in catching instructors. They've got a bunch of guys on their staff, whether it's Dusty Wathan or, you know, then the explicit catching instructors, Craig Driver and Bob Stumpo, who work with catchers. And I think that, you know, Realmuto is certainly going to have the resources to look at that area of his game if he wants to and make it even better than it already is.
Scott Lauber, Philly.com, joining us here. Hot Stove checking in. Scott, what was your thought on the price the Phillies paid to get Realmuto, which was pretty big? The Marlins were asking reportedly a lot from every team that they dealt with, and the Phillies, at the end of the day, I think got a deal that was probably less than what others were being asked earlier this offseason, yet they did surrender Sixto Sanchez, their number one pitching prospect. What did you think of what they paid?
Yeah, look, I mean, clearly the price was a little lower than it was, say, in November, December, when the Phillies were talking to the Marlins originally. And, you know, the Mets were a team that was really, really hot and heavy for Realmuto. And the names you kept hearing associated with those talks, you know, was that the Marlins were asking for multiples of, you know, Brandon Nimmo and Ahmed Rosario and Mike Conforto and, you know, established big league players on their roster who are big parts of their team and multiples of those guys. And so, you know, for the Phillies to quote unquote get away with, you know, making this deal, giving up, you know, one player off their big league roster and only one of their top prospects, the top prospect, but only one of their, you know, really significant top prospects, you know, certainly the price had come down. I think the Marlins realized the closer we got here to spring training, you know, I spoke to somebody a day or two before the trade went down about, you know, about the Marlins timeline. And the person said to me, look, they can't bring him to camp. I mean, when pitchers and catchers report next week, he can't be reporting to Marlins camp. And the Marlins seemed to realize that. So I think the closer we got, the more they realized, look, if we're going to make a move, we got to make this move before he gets there and we got to get this cleared up. And so, you know, from talking to Matt Klentak and what he's said about it, it sounds as though he reached back out to the Marlins last weekend, kind of innocently enough, sort of a text message to Mike Hill, his opposite number there in Miami, and, you know, hey, what's up with Realmuto? And that led to more substantive conversations, and it was clear the Marlins wanted to get this done. So, you know, I do think the price came down from what they were asking in November, December. You know, that's difficult to say, given that the Phillies did give up Sixto Sanchez. But, you know, I'm kind of wondering, you know, I mean, you know, we've heard various things. I mean, so obviously he had the injury last year, and, you know, maybe there are some whispers about his conditioning and were the Phillies truly happy with Sixto Sanchez, or did they think that maybe, that for as talented as he is, that there were some things that were sort of that they didn't like, and that maybe the fact that a guy like Adonis Medina, for example, sort of rose in their you know, in their ranks last year. Maybe they look at it, and I know for a fact that they look at it and they say, well, you know, we've collected so much pitching in our farm system that we can trade even Sixto Sanchez in a deal for a guy like Real Muto. You weren't going to trade Sixto Sanchez for just anyone. In a deal like this, I think they felt like they've collected so much pitching in their farm system that even Sixto Sanchez could be put in a deal like this, and they could overcome that because they have enough arms that they like, maybe not as much, but nearly as much. And so, you know, look, to get a guy like Real Muto, you were going to have to pay a price. There was going to be some pain attached to a deal like that. And so that's the pain is, you know, the risk is, of course, we turn around a couple of years from now and Sixto Sanchez is pitching for the Marlins and he's the next Pedro Martinez. But I think it's a more likelihood that he's not going to be at that level, that he's going to be a big league pitcher and maybe not a great one. So, I mean, who knows? But, you know, clearly I think they came down from that. I think the fact that third player, Will Stewart, who had a very nice year last year in Lakewood, but nevertheless is not, you know, kind of on anyone's top prospect radar. The fact that that was sort of the list of kind of player the Marlins were picking from for the third player tells you that the price did come down from, you know, Nimmo, Rosario, and Conforto with the Mets back in November.
Scott, what do you think about overall the job Matt Klentak is doing here? He's obviously had a good offseason improving the team, but the one thing that keeps standing out to me is he doesn't really seem to hone in on this is what I have to do or this is what needs to be done, but rather I'm just going to find a way to improve this team. Like all offseason, they've been touting Jorge Alfaro. They passed on Yasmani Grandal. They passed on re-signing Wilson Ramos. They clearly didn't say, we have to go upgrade catcher. It just feels like Matt's whole thing is trying to be opportunistic. Like, yeah, they had to improve their defense, but there's not one single way to do it. Even last year, they wanted to improve their on-base, wanted more power. They signed Carlos Santana. It just feels like Matt Klentak is not married to any one way to make the team better. He's just trying to find the best value and the best way to do it as he goes about this thing.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of took the word right off the tip of my tongue. Opportunistic was the first thing that kind of came to mind for me as you were talking there. And look, I mean, let's be honest, when the offseason started, I thought that one of the challenges for Matt Klentak in this offseason was that the Phillies could go in so many different directions, that there were needs in multiple areas, and you looked at who was out there either on the trade market or on the free agent market, and you were like, well, this is one of like those choose your own adventure books when you were a kid, and you could go down 8 different roads and it would lead you to a different place. And I think what he's been good at so far this offseason are two things. First of all, being opportunistic and sort of saying like, okay, you know, I can strike early for Andrew McCutchen, and maybe that means overpaying a little bit, but you know, make an opportunistic move for a guy you like early in the off season rather than sitting back and waiting for Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. You know, the sense everybody got back in November even was that Machado and Harper were not signing anytime soon. We didn't know that we'd be sitting here the second week of February and they'd still be unsigned. But I don't think anybody thought that they'd be like the first few names off the board. It's just not sort of the way things are in baseball these days. The bigger names tend to go later, it seems like, especially those like Harper that are represented by Scott Boras always go later. So, you know, he wasn't going to sit back and wait. I think he was opportunistic to jump on some things early. And also, he maintained some flexibility. So he went out and he gets Gene Segura. But that doesn't take you out of Manny Machado. And Andrew McCutchen doesn't take you out of Bryce Harper. I mean, you can still do those things even with the moves you've made to strengthen yourself around that top guy. So I think the combination of being opportunistic and remaining flexible and keeping their making every move that they've made with an eye on Harper and Machado, but not being bound to Harper and Machado, if that makes sense. I think he struck that balance very well. And, you know, now here we are days away from pitchers and catchers, and they're still very well positioned to get the big fish, and they've gotten a bunch of other really good players to go around it.
Yeah, they have. And that's the big thing left, to see if they get Harper or Machado and where it goes from there and which one files in. Scott, if there's one thing outside of the big fish that keeps coming up with listeners and with fans of the team, is this starting pitching good enough? And Keuchel is still out there. I'm sure if they want to, they have plenty of money, they could probably go get Dallas Keuchel and one of these guys over the next couple of weeks. Or they could wait and allow this young staff to go into the season, see what they have, and then make a move maybe more towards the deadline for an available pitcher. What do you think about this rotation, and which path do you think they might take? A guy like Keuchel, a Gio Gonzalez who's still out there, or do you think maybe they're going to go into this season with the same rotation and maybe upgrade as the year goes along?
Yeah, I think, look, they wanted Patrick Corbin. You know, they invited him here, spent a day with him. I think they had a lot of interest in Jay Happ. Those guys went elsewhere. And when they came off the board, I think they looked at the rest of the free agent market for pitching. You know, and you tick down the names on the list, it's like Wade Miley, Gio Gonzalez, I think that they've kind of looked at a lot of these names and they've said, not really, because if that's going to take innings away from our young pitchers, we're not really upgrading. I think that my opinion is Dallas Keuchel would be an upgrade over what they already have. I think they do feel like if they get Dallas Keuchel, well, they better get Manny Machado too, because another ground ball pitcher. I think you really still need to, you could still stand to make your infield defense better, especially if you get another ground ball pitcher like Dallas Keuchel. So, I talked to Chris Young about this last month, and, he talked a lot about how much he likes the young pitchers and would like to see, would like to turn them loose and sort of see what they've got. And that's, again, that's Pivetta, Velasquez, Eflin, and Eichhoff, and sort of see if they can take that next step forward. Now, we all know that development of, especially of pitching in baseball, is not always linear. In fact, it's rarely linear. So if one or two of those guys takes a step forward, you can bet one or two of them are going to also take a step backward. So, I'm of the belief that there's still a pitcher short. The question is, like you said, do they go out and get that pitcher now, or do they kind of wait, see what they have, and try to trade for a pitcher before the deadline? Based on what I've heard from them and based on how they've acted, not only in the offseason but also at the trade deadline last year, I'm inclined to say that they're going to wait and see. Let Pivetta pitch a little bit, let Velasquez pitch a little bit, let Eflin go or Eichhoff, who's back from, his health problems, and sort of see what you've got and then go out and make a move if you need to. Because I don't, as much as I think Dallas Keuchel's an upgrade, I don't think he bowls them over, and I could be wrong. I guess they could get down there and they could look at things and they could say, especially if they get Harper or Machado, and say, well, now we've got the big guy and we've made all these other improvements. We have the money to do it. Let's go get Dallas Keuchel too and really make a run at this thing. So I guess they could shift pretty easily, but just the vibe I get is that they kind of want to see what they have and react accordingly.
Scott Lauber, Philly.com. Scott, really appreciate you hopping on tonight throughout the offseason. Enjoy Clearwater. I'm sure you're heading down there soon, and maybe we'll check in from there in a couple weeks.
Absolutely.
There he goes.
Good.
Scott Lauber, Philly.com, Philadelphia Daily News, Inquirer, always thorough. Appreciate having him on every single time.
Lobsy.
Lobs coming on with us tonight. All right.
I mean, Gabe definitely calls him Lobs.
Oh, he's got to be. That's in layup.
Yeah.
All right, a couple of things we want to play for you. Let's play Gabe, and then we'll play Bob Knighty. So Gabe Kapler today on MLB Network talking about, hey, it's time to win right now.
I mean, I think that the move that Matt made on our behalf was a clear indication that we are in win right now mode and that we're going to push our chips in. And so rather than address Bryce and the individual, I put myself in the shoes of a player. When I see an organization, I see a club make that kind of commitment, I want to be a part of it. And I don't think it's just talent, right? I think the guys that we brought in this offseason, David Robertson, Andrew McCutchen, JT Realmuto, these are high character, high quality people. And I think, look, I'm not going to speak for Bryce Harper or Manny Machado or any other free agent out there, but I think we all want to come to work every day with high quality individuals. So I think the concept that we are in win mode right now, that commitment was clearly demonstrated by Matt, our front office and our ownership group, and the fact that you're going to come to work every day in an environment that you're going to be surrounded by high-quality individuals, I think those are very attractive reasons to come to the field.
Win now mode, right now. That's Gabe Kapler on MLB Network. Well, it would help if they had a guy like Machado or Harper to help them win now. Here's Bob Nightingale on the Baseball Tonight podcast today talking to Buster Only about Harper, Machado, and their markets. Here's Bob Nightingale.
So we're hearing Chicago White Sox and only Chicago White Sox. I think they eventually get this thing done. It's almost like you've been about Buster with the Boston Red Sox approach last year with J.D. Martinez. And the White Sox get that 7-year offer. They're sitting on it. And, you know, they can tweak some things. But I still think he ends up there. I'd be shocked if he's not.
What about the Phillies and Machado? Do you think that they're in play at this point?
I'm not hearing much. You know, I'm surprised because it was so much early on. It was either the White Sox or the Phillies. You know, you wonder, you know, how much he wants to go to Philadelphia. And also, I do think the White Sox played it smart by trading for Yonder Alonso, who's not only his brother-in-law, but is, you know, his best friend in life, and John Jay, who's a good friend. So that's why I think if everything was equal, you know, White Sox went out. I think he would love to play with Yonder at least 1 year. I think
yeah, you and I reported
more focused toward Harper.
So that was Nightingale basically saying Machado to the White Sox. Like he just basically that said that's where he's going, and the Phillies haven't been in the talks of it for a little while there, and now this is on Harper and the mix for him.
You know, I think Philadelphia is still, you know, kind of taking that same approach to sitting around with their offer. You know, Harper's in a different case in the sense he's already turned down, you know, 10 years at 300, deferred, you know, it's probably worth about 280, 284. So it might be a little, you know, embarrassing he doesn't at least get that offer. I think these teams that jumped in now are just, you know, exploratory. You know, there's no way the Giants are offering, you know, 250, 300. Padres aren't either.
Machado, White Sox, Harper, Phillies. That's the picture Bob Nightingale painted there. 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T Verizon wireless cell phones. We'll come back. Your phone calls, a little bit of Jason Kelce's speech, and a process pregame show, a postgame show on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.